Chapter 36. Because I'd been too lazy to ever take anything down, except that one Rights of Man poster I'd put up and thrown away at least three times, the walls of my old bedroom were kind of a history of things I'd been into my whole life, starting with the original 151 Pokemon poster from when I'd been about 10, moving up through Cary Grant from the classic movie phase I'd had when I'd been 12 and wanting to feel very grown up. Then there was the Brokeback Mountain poster, back from when two cowboys shag once, then one of them dies, was the best rep you got in mainstream media, if you weren't old enough to watch Queer as Folk. Also, they weren't even proper cowboys. They spent most of their time looking at sheep. Which, growing up in a place where looking at sheep was about the most exciting thing you could do on a Friday night, wasn't the escapist fantasy I was hoping for. I scowled moodily at Cary Grant and tried to shake the notion that I might have had a thing for stern-featured, clean-cut guys that went back way longer than I thought. And it felt weird to be lying on my childhood bed, thinking about adult problems. Because you didn't get much more adult, either in the euphemistic about sex way, or the realistic about bills and responsibilities way, than stressing over your wedding. And who, boy, was I stressing? It was just so muddy and impossible, because I loved Oliver, and I wanted to be with him for, like, ever. But the more I thought about it, the more I got this hard-to-pin-down, not-quite-sick, not-quite-scared, not-quite-something feeling that we were doing it wrong. Of course, I'd been feeling like I was doing it wrong for, well, not my whole life. When I'd been young and full of unearned confidence, I'd been pretty convinced that I was nailing it, and anybody who failed to nail it was suffering from a tragic case of not being me. But then Miles had happened, and suddenly I'd realised that the young, confident me was full of shit. And then a whole lot of years had passed, and now here I was, slowly getting better, but still crushingly aware I was making it up as I went along. Except even by my standards, the wedding had strong doing-it-wrong energy. I'd proposed almost by accident. I'd nearly been put off buying a ring by a mildly rude man in a mid-range jeweller's. Oliver's parents had been so horrified that they'd made the whole thing feel less like a party than a protest. And then one of them had immediately dropped dead, giving everything a complex set of implications that I was nowhere near getting my head around. And now we were bickering over tiny details that neither of us cared about. Seriously, though, what was going on with that? How could something that objectively did not matter become the hill you were most determined to die on? Because ultimately, if Oliver wanted a band, fine, we could have a band. We could hire Blue Honey, or Felicity, or the Corkscrews, and it would make no fucking difference, and it would still be the happiest fucking day of our whole fucking lives, because it fucking had to be. Except, the more I thought about it, the more I was determined to have a DJ. Because I did not want four men in cardigans, or three guys and a surprisingly attractive woman, doing a ska punk remix of Thinking Out Loud over our first dance as a married couple. Especially because Oliver couldn't dance, and it would make a ska punk remix of Thinking Out Loud our song. Fuck. We'd been together for nearly 3 years, and we didn't even have an our song. Or worse, we did, and it was This American Life. We were going to have our first dance to Sarah Koenig following a series of small cases through a county courthouse in Cleveland. To be fair, maybe that was a good argument against a DJ, because they'd ask, "So, what kind of music are you guys into?" And we'd have to say, "Well, my dad's in a band, but I hate his guts, and he listens to quirky horror podcasts and spoken word media about complicated political topics." Perhaps Mum was right. We just weren't people who were good at being married. Perhaps, given the fact that we, as this wedding was proving, had absolutely nothing in common and had only started dating as a literal hoax, We were the sorts of people who shouldn't be together at all. My phone rang. It was Oliver, and I wasn't in a space to be Olivering right now, so I let it go to voicemail, which again didn't say good things about my relationship. I bet James Royce Royce never let James Royce Royce's calls go to voicemail. I bet Bridge never let Tom's calls go to voicemail. I bet Prince Harry never let Meghan Markle's calls go to voicemail. I bet Prince Charles never let Camilla Parker Bowles's calls go to voicemail. Although he probably should have, at least in the 80s. Fuck. We were going to have to break up. We were going to have to tell all the nice people who had RSVP'd months ago, because Oliver had started sending invitations out before Christmas, that actually, on second thought, we weren't getting married after all. And also, we were leaving each other because we'd each independently decided the other person sucked, and so now we were both available if anyone was interested. Not that anyone should be, on my end at least, because I had a crap job and couldn't make French toast. Then I'd get drunk, rock up at Miles and Jojo's house, and beg Miles to take me back, or at least let me in on a threesome. Okay, there was a tiny, tiny, very slight possibility I was spiralling. My phone buzzed. I didn't look at it. It buzzed again. I didn't look at it again. The buzzing and the not looking continued until I ran out of not looking energy.
Lucien, I know you're upset, but I'm at your flat, said the first text. If you're inside, please let me know, said the second. Or if you aren't, please let me know where you are, said the third. Not where you are, necessarily. It's okay if you want some privacy. I understand. But I'm worried something has happened. Not that I don't think you can take care of yourself. But, well, ... Sorry, that was probably a bit dramatic, actually texting an ellipsis. But, well, I've recently had a poor track record with arguing with people and then having them immediately die. And I know rationally that hasn't happened. At least it's very unlikely that it's happened. But I'm worried it has happened. Which I know isn't your fault, and isn't your problem. But if you could just text me and let me know that you're okay. When you're ready. Sorry I'm being clingy. Take your time. I'm just worried. Lucien? Are you okay? Lucien, I'm very worried. Sorry, I didn't mean to get like that. Take as long as you need. Lucien?
I shouldn't have texted back. Hello, I am a murderer. I took Luke's phone. He's dead now. But I did. I also shouldn't have followed it up with, bet you wish you'd got that DJ. But I did that too.
Lucien, you are not funny.
Who is Lucien? I am a murderer. For a moment I thought I'd gone too far, but eventually Oliver came back with,
then how did you know about the DJ?
Luke told me, I texted back, while I was murdering him. I hit send, then immediately followed it up with, he said, oh no, if only Oliver had let me have a DJ, I wouldn't have been walking down this dark alley where I'm getting murdered. My phone rang, and this time, I answered it.
I'm sorry, I said hurtful things to you.
It was a cocktail of three of Oliver's voices, stern, poured over a base of secretly amused, with a dash of contrite.
But please don't pretend to be murdered.
The words, especially not when my dad just died, hung unspoken between us. And the fact that they remained unspoken was probably a sign that we were in a slightly better space than we had been a few hours ago. Sorry. I lay back on the bed and shut my eyes. For that, and for, you know, I said some pretty mean things too. I think all the wedding stuff is just getting really...
I know.
Oliver did his best to beam understanding down the phone at me, and I caught at least some of it.
I assume you're at your mother's?
Yes, I told him. I'll stay here tonight, if that's okay, because it'd feel a bit shitty to show up on her doorstep and then bail the moment it's convenient. Plus, if I was honest, I wasn't totally sure we wouldn't start setting each other off again if I went straight back. Oliver made a kind of auditory nod.
You're right. It's getting late. I'll miss you, of course.
I'll miss you too. And it wasn't a lie, because I would. I'd miss his warmth and the steady rhythm of his breath in the dark, the way we'd sometimes roll apart naturally in the night, and Oliver would always end up rolling back. The special occasions where we'd both wake up horny, and work still seemed forever away. Not that there'd been so many of those lately. But right now, there were also a bunch of things I wouldn't miss, like the not-quite-arguments, and the not-quite-compromises, and the constant spectres of things not quite said. It was almost like one of us was cheating, except it wasn't one of us, it was both of us. And what we were cheating with was our own wedding. What are we going to do? I asked, unintentionally out loud. Oliver sighed.
Well, having looked into it, I think that you're right, and there's no sense hiring a band if we can't find one that either of us feels strongly about.
It wasn't what I'd meant, but it was the closest we were going to get. Okay, that's... Thanks.
But I also think, Oliver went on, that DJs are a bit... Sorry to say this... tacky.
In his defence, they were. It's just I was worried cutting all the tackiness out of our wedding would cut out all the fun, and then 50 years from now I'd be sitting in my old people's home, looking back on a day that could have happened to anyone. So, what? The plan is no music? Everybody's standing around talking awkwardly? Or I guess we could get one of those giant games of Twister.
If you really want a giant Twister, I won't fight you on it.
Oliver, that was a joke. I don't want to play giant Twister at my wedding. A teeth-clenching silence echoed down the line.
I'm sorry. I'm genuinely trying here. I'm aware I'm probably coming across as...
A steamrollery wedding tyrant, I suggested.
I'm not sure I'd put it quite like that, but... Yes.
Another pause.
I think I just want everything to be perfect for us.
Perfect was not a good word for Oliver. In fact, it had nearly ruined our relationship once already. But in some ways, hearing him say it was a relief, because it meant that actually he was the one with the problem here. And it was a problem I kind of knew how to fix. And that was way easier to think about than me, or how I felt, or if Mum had been right all along. Okay. I took a deep breath. I could do this. This was doable. We were going to figure this out. I think you might be getting in your head a bit.
I am aware,
he said, a little coolly. And I think, I continued, that where you're getting mixed up is that you're confusing perfect for us with perfect. The perfect wedding is in June, in the church you grew up in, and has a live band and centrepieces that match the bridesmaids' dresses. The perfect for us wedding is you and me, and people we care about, in a venue that fits a sensible number of people, and music we like played by... I could hear Oliver relaxing.
A failed musician who says things like, and now one for the oldies.
Yeah, or, I don't know, a laptop. Or if you want, I could ask Reese to get the male voice choir back. Oliver's breathing was steadying, which I took as a good sign.
Actually, I was wondering if you think I'm being a steamrollery wedding tyrant, do say so. I thought it might be nice to put together a playlist and perhaps get every guest to contribute a song.
In practice, I was mildly concerned that this would mean Alex contributing the Eton boating song and Professor Fairclough contributing a 2-hour lecture on Formicidae. But it did sound... That sounds perfect for us.
Then I'll send out song requests. Thank you for being so... I'm sorry, Lucien. I really am.
Me too. I thought it best to apologise back, even though we'd now formally diagnosed this as an Oliver issue. And it definitely was an Oliver issue, not one that my years of baggage and self-loathing were in any way exacerbating. And I'll be back first thing tomorrow to... What's next on the list?
Bronwyn wants to finalise the menu.
Oh yes, that was the other big compromise. We were having all-vegan catering. But that one I'd been fine with, even though I'd have secretly loved a burger option. Because unlike the band, it had clearly mattered. I mean, I'm still the opposite of an expert. As long as it's got those spiced seed things, I'll be happy. He was smiling now.
She'll be here at noon.
Ugh. That meant getting up at a sensible time. I'll be there, I told him. Love you. He love you too'd, and we hung up. Then I lay down on the bed, wondering why I didn't feel happier. I mean, we'd fixed the music thing and found a middle ground that was a middle ground instead of something neither of us wanted. And Oliver had apologised, and I'd apologised slightly less than he had, which, according to the Disagreeing Couples Act of 1974, meant I'd won. For fuck's sake. I was getting married. I was getting married to an amazing man I was in love with, as was my hard-won legal right. And yes, Mum had tried to do that thing that mums do when you're picked last in sports, where they tell you not everyone has to be good at everything. But this was my relationship, not a game of rounders. I couldn't just shrug and say, well, when am I ever going to need that in real life anyway? No. This was my fucking wedding. I'd planned it. I deserved it. And I was damn well going to have it. Chapter 37. Picking a best man was a complicated business, because you didn't want to be gender normative, but if you got too role reversey, you ended up with something that was gender normative in the other direction. For Oliver, it had been simple. Well, simple-ish, because he'd asked Christopher, which had been obvious in one way, because apparently asking your brother was traditional, but really difficult in another, because post-funeral Oliver and Christopher had only just settled into a place where it was even a reasonable thing to ask. But they'd pushed through it and were now slowly building the kind of relationship where they could actually like each other. I didn't have the same options. I just had a bunch of friends, all of whom were, in their own special ways, utterly unsuitable. Tom was an ex, and technically Bridget's friend rather than mine, both of which made it weird. The James Royce Royces came as a unit, and it would have felt unfair to ask one but not the other. I refused to ask any of my co-workers, so that left Bridge and Priya. And Bridge should have been my go-to choice, because she'd made me her maid of honour, and I was owed some freaking payback. Only, something about Bridge didn't scream best man to me. She was my best friend, but when I thought of a best man, I thought of someone who I'd gone on the pull with in a disastrous attempt to get over a failed relationship, or drunk absinthe with at 3 in the morning, or ranted to about how awful it was that all our friends were pairing off like a bunch of squares while we were young, free, single, and totally miserable. And that was definitely Priya. Besides, when I called Bridge to break the good or bad news, she'd been in the middle of a major work crisis because the acclaimed author of I'm Out of the Office at the Moment, Please Forward Any Translation Work to My Personal Email Address had vanished overnight somewhere in the vicinity of the Ungelholm UFO Memorial, leaving only 38 manuscript pages, a cassette recording of Philip Glass's Akhenaten, and a note saying, "To the fairest." So, yeah, Priya had stepped up, or at least not told me to fuck off, and was doing a really good job. For a start, she totally ignored me when I said I wanted a small, low-key, non-gender-specific animal party, and instead threw me a massive rager at a friend's gallery. She'd even got me a rainbow balloon arch, although she did tell me we were going to shoot it with BB guns at the end of the evening because, and I quote,
"I love you and respect your choices, but balloon arches are twee as fuck."
Whatever. It was my twee as fuck balloon arch, and I was going to stand under it for as long as possible, or at least for a couple of minutes, because, it turned out, standing under a balloon arch by yourself wasn't as much fun as I thought it was going to be. Everything else, however, was kind of amazing. Which shouldn't have been surprising on account of how Priya was also kind of amazing. Not that I'd ever tell her to her face, in case she thought I liked her or something. The gallery was one of those old Victorian warehouses that had been repurposed just enough to be usable, but not so much that it didn't feel like the owner was elbowing you in the ribs every 5 minutes, saying, "Hey, look at that exposed brickwork and those authentic window fittings. Aren't they funky and incongruous?" It was currently exhibiting a bunch of queer artists who did the type of work that I really liked knowing existed, because it made me feel part of an important cultural thing, but didn't particularly understand, because, at the end of the day, queer art was still art, and I was still a total pleb. Along with the art, there were also drinks, music, lights, and a whole lot of people, approximately half of whom I knew, and the other half Priya knew and had brought along to make me feel cooler than I was. And, actually, it was working. I was incredibly cool. I was the sort of person who got to have a super queer, super modern, non-gender-specific animal party full of exciting people in an exciting venue organised by my exciting lesbian best man. This was, without a doubt, the best part of getting married so far. And the man I was getting married to would have hated it. Well, to be fair, he might have liked the art bit. For a little while, I just floated, drink in hand, basking in reflected relevance, accepting hugs and congratulations from friends, acquaintances, and total strangers. It was like I'd won something, which I suppose, from a romantic perspective, I kind of had. Eventually, I found Priya, tucked in an alcove, next to a mural depicting the birth of Venus as a hot, naked twink. She was with Teresa and Andy, and deep in conversation with someone I thought was the gallery owner, a tall woman with a shaved head who looked like she'd been in the art game long enough to give no fucks. "Thank you for my party," I said, in a rush of un-me-like ebullience.
"Whatever," Priya replied. "You know I think marriage is bollocks, but if it makes you happy, fine."
"Nuanced as ever," observed Teresa, who had put aside her usual academic chic for a little black cocktail dress that still managed to make me feel like I was late for a lecture. Priya, though, looked like Priya, rainbow-laced docks and all.
"Hey, there's a reason I work in a visual medium. And while I mostly agree on the patriarchal bollocks that should have gone out with the Dark Ages front..."
This was Andy, an intense woman with bleached blonde swept-back hair, wearing one of those tank tops that only a very specific sort of person could get away with.
"Isn't it an important de jure equality thing? I mean, I don't want us to get married."
She made a kind of circular nod, indicating her partners.
"But I do think we should be allowed to."
The gallery owner flashed a ring.
"Married woman over here, fine with it?" "You're all against me."
Priya rolled her eyes.
"Oh, and Luke... this is Abina. This is her place."
"Thanks," I told her reflexively. "This is a really great venue."
"It's not a venue, mate."
She didn't seem offended. More like she wanted to make a point.
"It's a gallery. But be honest, would you be here if there wasn't also a party in it.
My vicarious coolness began leaking out. No? She gave a vindicated nod.
Do the artists a favour. Try to actually look at a couple of pieces. And if you spill a drink on something, you buy it.
I cast a guilty eye at the birth of Twink Venus and tried to think of something appreciative to say. Well, this is, nice. And suddenly I wished Oliver was with me. He'd have had something to say about a naked guy on a shell, about how it was like a commentary on the constructed nature of beauty or something. It's, I tried, like a commentary on the, like, constructed nature of beauty. Priya put a hand on my shoulder.
Luke, we've known each other for 10 years, and the most insightful thing you've ever said about a piece of my work was, wow, isn't it big? And that's still more insightful than what you said just now.
So it's not, whatever I just said, I asked.
No, it probably is.
That was Teresa taking a delicate sip from her glass of Prosecco.
But it's very gauche to say so. It's art, said Priya. It's not a crossword puzzle. It's not supposed to have an answer. It's about what it makes you think and how it makes you feel.
I glared at Twink Venus's tiny penis. It's making me feel I have inadequate opinions about art. Andy grinned.
Yeah, that's the other thing art is about. It's about making you feel bad because you didn't go to the right school. I went to a fucking comprehensive, put in Priya. Just like you. Yeah?
Folding her arms, Andy gave Priya a hard stare.
Then I went and got a job in a pub while you went to art college.
Priya glowered back in a way that felt more sexual tension-y than I was really comfortable noticing.
Why am I even dating you? Because I'm amazing in bed,
Andy told her. Oh, not you as well. I gave a groan. Do you ever actually have sex? Or do you just boast to each other about how great you are? Teresa made an I don't know these people gesture with her free hand.
Ignore it, Luke. It's their thing.
Andy and Priya were still doing their sex glare at each other, and it was heating up the space. I turned to Abina. Are you beginning to feel like a fourth/fifth wheel?
Kind of,
she said. We extricated ourselves from the get-a-room corner, and having taken the measure of me art-wise, Abina drifted off. That left me free to scan the gallery for familiar faces. I saw James Rolls-Royce and James Rolls-Royce, uncharacteristically unbabied, standing with Tom by a grey papier-mâché statue of a figure sitting hunched with its chin on its hands. Its body was covered in tally marks, and a stack of what looked like cherry stones were piled at its feet.
Well, James Rolls-Royce was saying, that's rather melancholy, isn't it?
I wandered over and exchanged hugs with the three of them. Oh, don't. I've just been talking to Priya, and she's made it very clear that I can't art. With a smile, James Rolls-Royce put a friendly arm around me.
Don't worry, Luke, my dear. Neither can any of the rest of us.
Apparently, I offered, it's about what it makes you think and feel. James thought and felt for a moment.
I'm mostly thinking, would it go well in the corner of the restaurant?
He turned to his husband.
You know, by the door to the kitchen.
Too hot, said James Rolls-Royce. And too humid. The paper would get soggy.
It must be...
James Rolls-Royce stirred a hand in the air like he was whipping a souffle. Assuming you whipped souffles.
Lacquered or something. I'm sure it would be fine. And it'd be nice to have a souvenir of Luke's bachelor party.
Are the pieces even for sale?
Asked Tom, who'd been busy texting while the James Rolls-Royces had been doing comparative art shopping. Turning, I scanned the room for Abina. The owner's over there. You could ask her. Before anybody could move,
Tom looked up from his phone again.
"That was Bridge," he said, to none of our surprise. "She'll be here soon. She got delayed because they sent one of their interns out to the Angleholm UFO Memorial to look for that author who went missing. And now he's gone missing too."
That sounded basically normal, once you adjusted for the Bridge's life factor.
"Anyway, Pumpkin," James Rolls-Royce gave me a squeeze, "you realise you're officially joining the ranks of the tediously wed."
"How tedious is it going to be?" I asked.
"Well," said Tom, with a smile, "I'm still in the honeymoon stage, so not tedious at all."
James Rolls-Royce managed to maintain hug contact while turning to face someone else.
"You're married to our Bridget. There are a number of problems I can anticipate in your future life, but tedium is not one of them."
His expression grew slightly marshmallowy.
"In my experience, Luke, married life is rather wonderful. And of course now we have baby Jay, which means every day is a fresh adventure."
Oh, God. We were about to be told a fresh adventure. I was at a party celebrating the end of my youthful bachelorhood while one of my married friends regaled us with stories about his baby.
"Of course," James Rolls-Royce went on, "we should probably be calling him Toddler Jay now."
James Rolls-Royce shook his head.
"No, it's fine. We're using baby as an affectionate diminutive, not as reference to a specific developmental stage."
"There's no need to be so literal, darling. I was just making a funny."
Letting me go, James Rolls-Royce produced his phone and started scrolling.
"Yesterday he made a tower of 3 blocks, using the blue, the red and the purple, which I think shows a natural aesthetic sense. But apparently 4 blocks is what we're shooting for."
We were shown the tower, then the tower with the blocks in a slightly different order, then an earlier version of the tower, which had only been 2 blocks. None of which distracted from the fact that affectionate diminutive Jay still looked like a goblin.
"Well," I said, "isn't he clever?"
And once again, I wished Oliver was with me, because he could say things like that, and he wouldn't sound sarcastic.
"You may scoff, Luke O'Donnell," declared James Rolls-Royce. "This will be you in a few years' time."
"Actually," I said, "I don't like to brag, but I reckon I could stack 3 blocks on top of each other right now." Putting a hand on his hip, James Rolls-Royce somehow managed to pout with his eyes.
"You know perfectly well what I mean. You and Oliver must have talked about it."
Shitting hell. "Must we?"
"You're about to get married. Of course you should have. What if one of you does and one of you doesn't?"
Oh, no. What if one of us did and one of us didn't? What if I did? What if I didn't? We could barely agree on band versus DJ, let alone baby versus not baby. My options were to calmly reflect on the sensible advice my good friend was giving me, or get incredibly fucking defensive. "Oh, right," I said, "because I suppose you two knew everything about each other's plans and goals and hopes and dreams before you even got engaged."
"Obviously we did."
James Rolls-Royce was trying really hard not to be aghast, but was failing dismally.
"Marriage is a serious commitment. It's forever, Luke."
I squirmed. "It's not, though, is it? Divorce is a thing. And also, eventually one of you will die."
"Tell you what," said Tom. "If those are your vows, I will have so much respect."
"They're not my vows." Now I thought about it, I probably needed to finish writing those. "I just mean you can work it out as you go, and it's possible to overplan." The other James Rolls-Royce took his husband by the hand and pulled him gently away.
"You'll be fine," he said. "Everyone's got their own way of doing things."
"But," James Rolls-Royce was protesting,
But look at Baby J.
James Royce Royce manoeuvred James Royce Royce's phone to James Royce Royce's eyeline. James Royce Royce visibly melted.
Look at his little face, his darling little face. Oh, I miss him so much. Do you not miss him, James?
Well,
James Royce Royce was at his most impassive.
I was with him all day, and we've been out for 2 hours, so no.
We were interrupted by the tip-tap of heels on the concrete floor, and a cry of,
Luke, I'm so sorry I'm late. Ooh, are those new Baby J photos?
This is my non-gender-specific animal party bridge, I wailed. We're meant to be celebrating the end of my wild single youth, not... It was too late. James Royce Royce had his phone under Bridget's nose, and she was staring at it, entranced.
Look, he was saying, here's Baby J.
Bridge clapped her hands.
Oh my God, he's grown. He's grown so fast.
He has. He's got so much bigger. I remember when he was only as big as a medium-sized turbot.
That's very specific, I put in. But it was ignored. Because baby.
This is him,
James Royce Royce continued.
Well, actually, I'm not sure what he's doing with those bits of plastic fruit, but it seems advanced. He might be grouping them by size and colour.
James Royce Royce squinted at the phone.
Honestly, I think he's just licking them.
That's advanced, insisted James Royce Royce. That's using all of his senses to make independent cognitive leaps.
Moving to the baby huddle, Tom put his arms around Bridge.
James, have you been at the parenting books again?
It's important to be informed.
Bridge gave another squeal.
What's he doing here?
Sitting down, explained James Royce Royce.
In a remarkable way,
added James Royce Royce. I was getting the feeling this would go on for a while, and I took it as a sign of my personal growth that I felt no compelling desire to compete for my friend's attention with an absent 2-year-old. Or maybe I just knew I'd lose. In an effort to look sophisticated and at home, I circled the sculpture, trying to look like I was appreciating it on an emotional and intellectual level.
So, what do you think?
Asked a nearby stranger. While I didn't jump exactly, I gave a busted, not understanding art hop.
Fuck. The thing about art, I bullshat, is that it's not supposed to have one interpretation. It's supposed to be, like, about how you think and feel.
He folded his arms in a calling my bluff kind of way.
So, what does it make you think, and how does it make you feel?
Since James Royce Royce was stealing my friends, I decided to steal his criticism.
It's sort of melancholy, and sort of... Oh my God, I bet raw is a really cliched thing to say about art, but, like, the choice of materials, and the way the figure is, like, barely holding it together.
It's also pretty angry, said the guy.
He was small and slight, with a faint rash of dark stubble across his jaw.
Is it? I squinted. Well, I was angry when I made it.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I gave him a dirty look. That's cheating. It's hard enough having opinions about art without the artist standing there laughing at you.
I'm not laughing. You were looking at my sculpture. I thought you might be interested.
Yeah, you have massively misread the situation. I mean, I went on quickly, when I realised how rude that sounded. I'm sure it's great. I just suck at culture. If I was a yoghurt, I wouldn't be a yoghurt. He gave a slow, sly grin.
Wow. You also suck at analogies.
I suck at many things, I told him.
And now... His eyes met mine. You're just bragging.
I opened my mouth, then closed it again quickly. This was gently circling the outskirts of flirty. And on the one hand, that was nice and weirdly affirming, especially because, now I thought about it, I hadn't once thought to ask him if he was planning to sell my story to the newspapers. On the other hand... I don't mean to... At the risk of making assumptions, I'm engaged. He laughed, and I flattered myself that he also looked just a tiny bit disappointed.
Oh, right, you're Luke. I should have guessed when you had no idea about art.
Hey, there are at least four other people here who are exactly as ignorant as I am.
I can go flirt with them, if you like, he said.
Nope, all married, so you're stuck with me. Or I suppose you could go talk with literally anyone else.
Well...
His lips quirked back into that devilish smile.
I kind of already know this crowd, so unless you want to go back to your married friends, I'm good.
I gave a hollow groan. Please don't make me go back to them. They're still looking at baby pictures, and two of them are trying to get a mortgage.
That's one hell of a stag do.
Hey, I poked him lightly. Non-gender-specific animal do, thank you. And also, I don't know your name, which is rude because you know mine.
I'm an artist, he told me, so I'm allowed to be rude.
Wow, you really are a friend of Priya's.
He laughed. Sorry, it's Tyler.
And this, I gestured hopelessly at the sculpture. This is an art that you did.
It is indeed, he confirmed, an art that I did. A raw, angry, melancholy art that I did.
What were you raw, angry and melancholy about? He lifted one shoulder in a sort of self-mocking shrug.
The Tavistock Centre?
Oh, I said, finally getting a piece of art. Is that why... Are those calendars?
Yeah. Honestly, it's a slightly pissy piece of protest art. But having to wait 4.5 years for an initial consultation is total shit.
I gave one of those, this is a major problem that I cannot in any way contribute to solving cringes. I'm sorry, that is... totally shit.
Don't worry about it. I waited. I got my diagnosis. I waited again. I got referred to an endocrinologist. Finally got on tea.
Yay, I offered.
And thankfully, Tyler added, I'm not married, so I don't have a spouse who would have a legal right to block my transition.
Sorry, angry statue.
He pointed at himself. Still quite knocked.
If it helps, I leaned in slightly. You're hot, free and single. And if there's one thing I've learned from Priya, it's that making angry art is a great way to pull.
He nodded. Yeah, I just need to work on not going for the engaged guy at the engagement party.
For what it's worth, I said, I absolutely would if I wasn't engaged. Then again, if I wasn't engaged, I'd probably be a self-loathing prick, and we'd have a shit time.
Then I'll take engaged, and you not being a self-loathing prick.
I snagged us a couple of glasses of... Actually, we'd gone through the Prosecco budget, and were now into undisclosed fizzy wine. And a non-shit time.
A non-shit time,
echoed Tyler, raising his glass. Of, I added, an engaged person appropriate variety.
He nodded. I was thinking we could drink, dance, lightly flirt on the understanding nothing would happen, and you could get all the art wrong so I could laugh at you.
That,
I too lifted my glass. Sounds like my kind of evening.
Chapter 38. It had been my idea that we go back to Quo Vadis, the restaurant where we'd had our first disastrous date, sometime before the wedding. And at the time, the day after our non-gender-specific animal parties had seemed sensible. Besides, scheduling anything at the moment was borderline impossible, because it meant planning an event inside planning another event. Our life was logistics all the way down. Unfortunately, I'd been working on the assumption that our non-gender-specific animal parties would be fairly low-key and wrap up before midnight. And Oliver's had. He'd been for a nice dinner with his nice friends, read a couple of chapters of real life, and gone to sleep. I, by contrast, had drunk more than I'd drunk in years, partied until dawn with a bunch of artists, had breakfast in... I couldn't remember... been deposited at my flat by kindly strangers, and woken at 3 in the afternoon with creases on my face from the sofa cushions, where I'd apparently passed out. All of which meant I was hungover and already late for the emotionally significant relationship bookending date I had myself arranged when my dad called. If I'd been thinking clearly, I wouldn't even have picked up. Especially since the last time we'd spoken he'd made me yet another empty promise and then fucked off out of my life. But see above, re late and hungover. "Have you got cancer?" I asked. "Actually, even if you do, I don't care."
"I'm doing well," he told me, as if I'd made a sincere inquiry into his health, instead of strongly implying I didn't give a shit whether he lived or died. "Thanks for asking."
I didn't. There was the teeniest, tiniest of pauses.
"I was talking to NME today, and they wanted to know what I was doing for your wedding."
Turning onto Dean Street, I paused, because barging into a restaurant late, hungover, and on the phone was the wrong kind of triple threat.
"I don't know, Dad. What are you doing for my wedding?"
"Well..."
A still tinier... still tinier pause.
"That very much depends on you."
I'd say this was John Fleming all over, but everything John Fleming did was John Fleming all over. As far as I could tell, being yourself all over at all times was basically how you got to be his brand of famous. "Sorry, do you want to come to my wedding?"
"I thought you might want me to come."
"Sorry, do you want to come to my wedding, but also not want to say you want to come to my wedding, because you have the emotional maturity of a complete wanker?"
"If you don't want me there, I'll understand. I'm sure you still have a lot of complicated feelings."
Oh, fuck him. He was going down this road again. And while this time I didn't have Oliver with me to call him on his bullshit, that was okay. "Actually," I told him, "my feelings are pretty simple." For a start, I was 100% confident that this was 100% about him thinking it would be good PR to be seen at his gay son's gay wedding, and 0% about anything else.
"I suppose it would be difficult for your mother as well,"
John Fleming mused. It was a pointed muse. And just for a moment... I could see the interview as if I was streaming it there and then. Obviously, I would have loved to go to Luke's wedding, but Odile, she can be so unstable. I tried to defog my head, which was difficult given how late I'd been out the previous night. "Are you really telling me I have to invite you to my wedding, or you'll shit on Mum in the tabloids?"
"Of course not."
He sounded offended. The way obnoxious people always sound offended when you confronted them with their obnoxious behaviour. Well, this sucked. On one level, I knew my mum could take care of herself. After all, she'd been taking care of herself for years, and she'd got spectacularly good at giving no fucks in her old age. On another, less rational level, I always hated it when my crap blew back on her. But I could do this.
I was a strong, independent person, and I could handle my dad being a bully. Are you sure? I tried. Because it sounds a lot like that is what you're saying, and, well, remember that my fiancé is a barrister. Technically, of course, he wasn't that sort of barrister. I was just hoping that John Fleming's inability to pay attention to anything that wasn't himself meant he wouldn't realise.
"I've never had much time for lawyers," Dad replied.
And perhaps I was imagining it, but he sounded cagier than he would have if he'd considered it a totally empty threat. "Yeah, but lawyers are like gravity," I told him. "It doesn't matter if you've got time for them. It matters that they've got time for you. And if you did start telling the Mail, or the Mirror, anything about Mum that could be considered, you know, libelous, then I'd actually know who to talk to now. In fact..." I decided to push my luck. "These days, I even know a High Court judge or two." At the other end of the phone, John Fleming made a contemplative noise. He didn't seem bothered exactly. It took a lot more than the threat of legal action to bother John Fleming. But one of my dad's most useful qualities was a very specific kind of apathy. If fame or money were on the line, he was unstoppable. But for everything else, he'd always take the easiest possible road to get what he wanted. And if something looked like being even the slightest bit difficult, he'd drop it like he had his marriage and his child.
"I was just giving you a call," he said at last, "to see if you wanted me at your wedding. But if you don't..."
He gave an infuriating pause.
"That's your choice. And I respect it."
"It is." And with that, I hung up. In some ways, that had gone better than any other conversation I'd ever had with my dad. But you couldn't win with him. You could only make losing feel marginally less shitty. And so I showed up for my very special, emotionally resonant date with my fiancé, who I loved, tired, hungover, late, and mentally drained from dealing with an arsehole. Oliver was already at the table, where he'd probably been for some time. It was the same table we'd sat at nearly 3 years ago, and he was wearing the same pinstriped suit, including the pocket watch that I'd since realised was another of his sly nods to a personal style that only masqueraded as conformity. "Oh, God." I half eased, half tripped onto the banquette. "I'm so sorry. Things got out of hand last night." One of Oliver's eyebrows twitched upwards in a meaner way than I was expecting.
"I'm aware."
Fuck. It really was like our first date. I was rubbish, and Oliver was annoyed. "And then," I hurried on, "just as I was getting here, my fucking dad rang." Oliver de-iced immediately.
"Are you all right?"
"Yeah, fine. He wanted to come to the wedding to prove what a big damn ally he is. I told him to piss off." Normally, Oliver championed my taking of no shit from my dad, but normally, we had twice as many dads between us.
"Lucien," he started, then broke off, then tried again. I'm sure you made the right decision, but I'm rather conscious at the moment that, all going well, one only has one wedding. And indeed, in the majority of cases, one father."
He had a point. It's just his point was about him, not about me. And now he needed me to be all sensitive and shit. Poor bastard. Catching the waiter's eye, I requested literally all the water and then turned back to Oliver. "I'm really sorry your dad, you know, can't. But my dad is not your dad. And my dad definitely shouldn't."
"I do know that," said Oliver,
with the air of someone who did not, in fact, know that. "Look," I slid a hand across the table to take his. "I was there at the funeral.
I heard the everything. I get that it's a head fuck and a half to have all these questions about who your father was and what he could have been to you and not have any answers. Oh, God. Oliver was biting his lip. And his eyes had gone soft in the bad, tearsy way, not the good, gazing adoringly way. Not only was I late and hungover to our super-special, emotionally resonant date night, I was going to make Oliver cry in a fancy restaurant. But the thing is, I added, probably too quickly, I have those answers about John Fleming. You were there when I got them. When someone drops you like a secretly recorded studio album the second they discover they don't have cancer, you know everything you need to know about them. And one of the things you know is that you don't want them at your wedding. Oliver blinked rapidly.
Of course. It's our wedding. And I think it's important that neither of us look back on it with any regrets.
Believe me, we'd both regret inviting John Fleming big time.
I'm sure we would have. I think I meant more in general.
I've also come to terms with not having a DJ. He gave the sort of smile you gave because it was expected, rather than because you really felt like smiling.
And have you also come to terms with...
the venue? I asked. No balloon arch?
It's more everything the balloon arch represents.
Oh no, we were back here again. Did we have to be back here again? At this point, Oliver, I don't even know what the balloon arch represents, except for trapped air and arguments.
I've been wondering that myself, he said. And do you think it might represent... well, this?
He passed his phone across the table, which was open at Bridget's Instagram feed. And while the three most recent pictures were the book she was currently reading, her brunch, and a house in Knightsbridge with a pink door, there were about 20 shots from my non-gender-specific animal party, a lot of which were me, a fair few of which were me and Tyler. I glanced from the phone to Oliver, to the phone again. Surely he didn't... fuck. A biley panic was rising up my throat. Listen, that was just a guy I met at the party. And we were having fun, and he knew I was engaged, and I went home alone.
I know, Lucien. And I trust you. I wouldn't be marrying you if I didn't trust you.
Okay. Phew. That was all very reassuring. What was less reassuring was that he kept speaking.
It's just... you looked happy.
I... what?
While I was working on a more substantial reply, the waiter showed with a very large jug of water.
Are you ready to order? He asked.
Which sent me into a different kind of panic, because I hadn't looked at the menu,
and I couldn't ever hear, are you ready to order, without wanting to stick, and if not, why not, on the end.
Oliver, of course, had his neuroses in different places.
A few more minutes, thank you.
Clearly, I needed to loop us back to the you looked happy thing. But I wasn't sure I wanted to, because it could only really mean two things. Either it meant that my boyfriend, soon-to-be husband, straight-up resented my happiness, which sucked, or it meant he thought I couldn't be happy with him, which sucked worse. So instead, I fluttered my lashes at him in a blatant attempt at distraction and segued into, do you want to order for me? He twitched an eyebrow.
If you like, although it will include the eel sandwich again. And don't think I haven't noticed you're deflecting.
How about, I suggested, I deflect for now, and when I've been fortified with an eel sandwich, we can, you know, have a serious conversation sort of thing.
Very well.
Oliver disappeared behind his menu with an eagerness that I hoped was about his love of the food, not his desire to avoid talking. I peeped over the top, trying to get him to look at me.
I'm happy to eat vegan with you,
You shouldn't have to.
No, but I can.
Do you want to?
He asked, in a way that I thought had layers. This was so typical of at the moment, Oliver. I'd deflected, he'd accepted the deflect, and was now getting around it anyway. That's not a fair question. You don't want to either, but you do it because you think it's right. And I think you're usually right about what's right. I just have crappy follow-through.
You know I don't like imposing my values on other people.
Fuck, this was still a metaphor, wasn't it? I was too hungover for metaphors. It's not about imposing your values. But we've been together for a long time and people change each other and that's normal. And unless the people are assholes, good. I gulped down my third glass of water. I'm never going to be a vegan the way you're a vegan. But that doesn't mean I'm going to feel I'm missing out if we go to a nice restaurant and I sometimes choose to have the salad. He seemed, at least, to be thinking about it. And when he asked,
"And are you in a salad mood tonight?"
I was 90% certain he was talking about the food. "How about..." Oh, I was so fucking grown up. I compromise. "I'd like the eel to start, for old time's sake, and I'll join you for a vegan main." Oliver's lips twitched.
"So, I'll order for you, but you'll tell me what to order."
I grinned at him, getting my own metaphor on. Kind of the best of both worlds, don't you think? This seemed to be going better. It was definitely going better. I'd managed to avoid throwing up in the breadbasket. Oliver had nearly smiled. And here we were in our first date restaurant, not having any awkward conversations about anything. At least until I popped the last piece of eel sandwich into my mouth.
"Lucien."
It was like someone had flicked a switch and put Oliver in serious mode again.
"I do need to talk about last night."
"I told you nothing happened."
"And I told you that wasn't the problem."
The Bailey panic was rising again. "Oliver, there shouldn't be a problem. It was one night, I went a bit wild, I overslept, I showed up here with a headache, and I'm sorry."
"But are you sure you..."
Oliver began, then stopped again.
"It doesn't have to be one night, if you don't want it to."
I reached for my water glass. "Honestly, I'm not sure I could take another one."
"No, but you've made it quite clear that you value that way of expressing yourself."
"Oh, for fuck's sake. A balloon arch is just a balloon arch. It doesn't mean anything except that I like rainbow balloon arches and you don't."
"I don't think that's actually true. And I don't think you do either. And it concerns me that we've had such difficulty designing a wedding that we feel represents us both equally."
This was supposed to be an evening for us. Our special evening. Our last special evening. And all we'd done was talk about my dad and wedding shit. "Oliver, I'm sick of the fucking wedding!" I'd said that way too loudly and way too emphatically.
"And you don't feel..." asked Oliver calmly. "That's a rather telling statement to be making a week before you're getting married."
"It's not about the marriage. It's about the..." I waved my hands about. "The everything else. I just want to be with you like we used to, before everything was about place settings and table confetti and never knowing which one of us is being the arsehole."
"What worries me is that it might be neither of us."
I glared at him across the table. "Only you could find that worrying."
"On the contrary."
He was still doing that slightly detached, rational thing he did when things were a bit too intense for him.
"If one of us is being an arsehole, then everything is simple. That person just needs to stop being an arsehole and we'll be fine. But if neither of us is being an arsehole, then that implies that we might have, and forgive the strong language, fundamental incompatibilities."
In any other context, I'd have found the fact he called the phrase
fundamental incompatibilities, strong language, kind of endearing. This, our special, emotionally resonant date I'd been late for and hung over at, was not any other context. So, I was fucking terrified.